the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate. Hello and welcome to Pure Home with me, Sahar Haqju. Well, as human beings, we've been created to be inquisitive, hence always seeking answers to our questions. Today we'll be answering some of your questions. We have a specialist here to help us. And of course, we have other segments to our program from here and there, a report, a story, and much, much more. So you'll definitely want to stay tuned for today's Pure Home. In our studios, we're honored to have back with us Dr. Mahmoud Karimi, who is an expert to answer your Islamic questions. Hello, Dr. Karimi, and welcome to the program.
Thank you. That's my pleasure to be here.
It's wonderful to have you. Dr. Karimi is the head of public relations at Imam Jafar Sadiq University. Dr. Karimi, you were here last time when we answered some questions. I'm not sure if last time it was questions pertaining to the children, but now we're moving on to just general questions.
Okay.
And we'll start off with one we have here. And here it says, I'm a woman who has been married for 10 years, but now I feel like I've fallen out of love with my husband and I no longer want to live with him. I know that divorce is not recommended in Islam, so would I be sinning if I got a divorce for purely selfish reasons?
All right. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'd like to say salamu alaykum first to all dear viewers. Let me have an introduction.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, a piece of bad news for those who are unmarried first.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Means, in fact, those who have the facilities or preparations for marriage, but they themselves have not married. So there are some traditions. For example, one of the hadiths says that the majority of people of Jahannam are unmarried ones, or the bachelors.
Mm-hmm.
So it shows that being single and remaining single is anyhow, you know, prepares the background and paves the ground for other sins.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a big problem. But in contrast, marriage is something that is recommended highly in Islam.
Mm-hmm.
But now, concerning the question, I should say that if you feel that after 10 years, then you have some problems and so you are out of love with your husband, So I think you should think more deeply.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, to see what is the difference between, what change you see now when you compare it with 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the changes are natural. We should accept that after 10 years, so maybe someone's beauty, someone's personality, mm-hmm. Some of his ethical qualities
right.
may have been changed mm-hmm. under the influence of the society.
Right.
It's
because life runs its course, so you're bound to change.
Means in the process of life, some of the changes are natural.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if she compares those changes to what happened to herself,
mm-hmm.
she would be satisfied that, okay, that is right, because this kind of changes are something natural. I should admit,
mm-hmm.
I should accept. Or some of the things maybe at the beginning of life, at the beginning of marriage, so she knew that this man has these qualities.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, in fact, she was satisfied with him in spite of all that.
Mm-hmm.
Then it means that you shouldn't change your mind now.
Right.
So if you accepted something at the beginning, now you should stay on it mm-hmm. up to the end.
So you should stay and work on it as opposed to kind of getting out.
Yes, You should work on it. This is.
But what if, I mean, she had, let's say she was a lot younger and she had the patience to deal with it at the time. And now, I mean, I think the issue here that she refers to is love. I mean, I guess it's a really general or ambiguous term. But here, I mean, if we say changes have occurred over time, but, you know, maybe she can't deal with them anymore. Is that possible?
Or? Yes. This is one thing. It means that, so at the beginning, we should have some preventive techniques and methods for not happening, and in fact, to prevent happening of these things.
So not making the mistake in the first place to choose this person.
Yes.
And then.
Yes. And, you know, so we have different ways of prevention. For example, at first, you should have, in fact, you should go to those counseling centers So they would give you advice concerning marriage, concerning your husband, your would-be husband. Mm-hmm. And then, in fact, you should be careful about the families. You know, sometimes maybe the boy and the girl are quite, in fact...
They're a good match, but the family is not a good match.
They are true and good match. But when they go to the families, they would say that, okay, there is a big gap in the families. And we cannot, in fact, seriously and to a big extent, we cannot separate the girl from her family and the boy from his family. Mm-hmm. So we should know that anyhow, he or she is a part of the family. So looking at the family and asking about the family is also important at that time. Another thing is that, we should see our expectations. So why you are out of love with him now? You know, sometimes your expectations are logical, but sometimes your expectations are illogical. So it means that for our expectations, firstly, our expectations when we are married should be different from the time that we are single. Because when I was single, I was just,
you were by yourself, so you didn't have to.
I was by myself, or finally by my family, by my members of the family, by my brothers, sisters, father and mother. So we knew each other well. We knew each other's expectation well.
Then came from the same background.
Yes, the same background, the same family. So this is, but now when you are married, your expectations should be different. This is the first thing. The second thing is that even now for your expectations in your marital period, there should be some limits. There should be some boundaries, some logical boundaries. To what extent you can ask your husband to do such and such a thing, or to have relation with such and such a man or such and such a woman. This is something that, so our expectations should be defined, should be prescribed, so in some way. So if we define and prescribe these things, I think those problems would not happen. But finally, so
at the end,
at the end, there may be some problems, yes. If actually there is a serious problem, and if there is not love, there is not that emotional love in the family between the husband and the wife, so it's a difficult thing. So we cannot say, and maybe the secret behind legitimacy of divorce in Islam is the same thing. We know that marriage is a contract in Islam, but this contract is different from other contracts. In other contracts, for example, if you have a financial contract, the law can force everybody to do his or her own work or to do his or her own part. But in marriage contract, you cannot force. You cannot force. You cannot force, you should love him. And you cannot force the husband that you must love her. It doesn't happen by force. In other contracts, it happens by force because it's a kind of contractual agreement and legal agreement. But here you have a natural and emotional, to some extent, agreement. So it is different. Then we should be careful not to disturb and not to harm this natural agreement. So if these emotions and this natural love, in fact, is in danger, then, so as soon as possible and as far as possible, we should repair it.
To try to mend it as opposed to giving up.
Yes, to mend it. And because, you know, sometimes some of the people choose divorce because it is the shortest way. Mm-hmm. Okay, I cannot live with him, I would divorce. Mm-hmm. No, this is not right. It is true, it is the shortest way, but it is not the most logical way.
Right. For a lot of people, it's easier to give up as opposed to working on something and trying to make it work.
Uh-huh. Because sometimes you have a difficult way, but it is logical, it is reasonable. And sometimes you have an easy and short way, but this easy and short way is not reasonable. Mm-hmm. So this is important that, okay, if the way is long, mm-hmm. is longer, but it is reasonable, means you have time to reform yourself. Mm-hmm. You have time to, you know, make your husband understand you. Mm-hmm. You have time to make his family understand you. So you should choose this way. Mm-hmm. And we can say that, in fact, divorce is, as I said, the last choice. Mm-hmm. It is the last choice. Means if you don't have, divorce is an evil, mm-hmm. but it is the lesser of the two evils. Mm-hmm. Yes, maybe on the other hand, you have evil, but that is the bigger evil. So if you came to the point that you have two evils, one is divorce and another is the bigger evil that mm-hmm. may destroy your marital life mm-hmm. at the end of the time. So here, divorce is legitimate, mm-hmm. you know, because it means that you have tested and tried all the ways. Mm-hmm. You have thought about it.
And it was just the last resort. And
you have consulted. You have done as far as possible about solving the problem. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes, as I said, the divorce is, instead of solving the problem, you mm-hmm. are wiping out the problem.
Just the easier way, like
this is the easiest way.
But just in just one word or so, if we wanted to say this person says, okay, well, if for purely selfish reasons, so would they? I guess this does mean they're taking the easier way out. Are they sinning or not?
So you know, everything which is selfish mm-hmm. means if I come to the conclusion that it is purely selfish, it is not recommended in Islam, you know.
Okay, so in a nutshell, we try to solve things as opposed to going to divorce as a first resort, use it as a last resort. Don't go away, we'll be right back.
The Judge and the Man. Once upon a time, a man owed another person some money. Someday, the creditor went to the debtor and said, "Pay your debt right now." The debtor said, "I don't have any money to pay." Then he ran away. The creditor and some other people also ran after him. The debtor climbed up a short wall, and then he climbed to the roof of a house. In the yard of that house, an old man was sleeping in the shade, and his family members were sitting around him. The debtor, who was on the roof, lost his control and fell down on the old man. As a result of this accident, the old man died, but the debtor could escape. The debtor wanted to save himself, so he escaped to a desert. While he was running in the desert, he heard some people say, "Oh man, help us and capture this horse." A horse was running away, and since its owner and his friends saw that the debtor ran very quickly, they asked him to help them catch the horse. The debtor didn't want to run after the horse because he was afraid that the creditor would catch up with him. So he took a stone and threw it at the horse. The stone hit one of the horse's eyes and it went blind in one eye. As a result, the horse owner and his friends also started to chase the man. When the man saw that people who were running after him were going to catch him, he changed his way and went to the town again, hoping to find a way to save himself. While running, he saw a group of people trying to lift up a donkey from the ground. The donkey was sitting on the ground and didn't move at all. The escaping man was running past them when the donkey's owner called him and said, "Oh man, come here and help us." The escaping man, who was tired and breathless, took the donkey's tail and pulled it. Suddenly, the donkey's tail was cut off. At this time, the donkey's owner and his companions ran after the man too. Since the escaping man was too tired, they managed to catch him. They fastened his arms and brought him to the judge. The judge was not a righteous man. The debtor looked at him and mimed something, which meant, "I will pay you if you help me." The judge looked at the complainants and said, "Tell me what this poor man has done." The creditor said, "He borrowed some money from me a long time ago, and he won't pay it back." "Has anyone seen that you have lent him money?" "No, there was no witness because we were friends."
"Is there any document?"
"No, nothing." "So go away, because you are entitled to nothing." The creditor went away. Then the horse owner came and said, "Oh, judge, please help us. My friends and I told this man not to let our horse escape, but this man threw a stone at the horse and made it blind in one eye." The judge said, "There's a solution to this problem. We should cut the horse in half. Then we should compare the healthy half with the injured half. This man will pay for the difference between the values of the two halves." The horse owner and his companions gave up the right and went away. The sons of the old man who had died came and said, "Oh, judge, our father was sick. This man fell down from the roof on our father, and he died as a result. Now we want blood money." The judge asked, "How old was your father?"
70, he said.
"This man is 30. Wait for 40 years and then ask him for blood money." They changed their minds and said, "We'll forego our right. Then you can go." Then the judge looked at the man whose donkey's tail was cut off. He asked, "What do you want? If you have something to say, say it, and I'll charge this man and grant your right." The donkey's owner thought that if he had something, he would have to pay something. So he said, "No, thank you. I don't have any complaint. In fact, my donkey didn't have any tail since it was born." He said this and went away quickly.
Back to the program. Well, we are here with Dr. Mahmoud Karimi, and we're speaking about, we're discussing questions that you, our dear viewers, have sent us about Islam. And the next question we have here is on a more, I guess, serious note. And here we have, "I've heard that a woman who has who says she's been raped needs four witnesses to accuse someone if this was done to her without anyone's presence. How is she supposed to find witnesses and fight for her right?"
Yes. So firstly, I should say that, you know, rape is one of the, we can say, capital sins and the mortal sins in Islam. Mm-hmm. So having and following a big punishment, not only in this world, but in the hereafter.
Right.
But concerning the problem, how one can defend her right. Mm-hmm. So here, there are some problems, you know. Sometimes when we see the punishment for this sin, we say, okay, the punishment is very important, mm-hmm. and If somebody commits this sin, so we should, as soon as possible, we should arrest him, and in fact, we should send him to the court, and so the punishment would be imposed on him.
Right.
But there are two other aspects here. So in addition to punishment, on the other hand, and on the other side, also we have, you know, the honor and the chastity of Muslim women and Muslim men,
mm-hmm.
you know. And also, the influence of this, of spreading or publishing the news of this kind of sins in the society,
mm-hmm.
because it would have consequences on the people, you know.
If they're named.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they are not named.
Mm-hmm.
I mean that, so, you know, if every day in the newspaper you have that, okay, there have been 3 cases, 4 cases of rape. So after some time, this can be something usual for people.
Mm-hmm.
Say, okay, this is a sin which is immediately...
So it decreases the effect
uh-huh.
that it would have on
yes,
people.
Yes, they consider it as a part of life, as a fact, and they say, okay, it can be done, but it is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but Islam sometimes does not like this kind of sins to be somehow published and spread everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So the evil part of this kind of sin would mm-hmm. be something seen and considered easy and simple
mm-hmm.
by the people. Therefore, mm-hmm. because of this, something like rape, so it is said that, okay, there should be 4 witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And usually there are not 4 witnesses when somebody is committing rape.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the secrets is that this kind of sins and then information about this kind of sins should not be spread and published everywhere
mm-hmm.
because people after some time would be used to that kind of thing and say they consider it as a fact.
Mm-hmm.
This is one point.
Okay.
Another point is that, okay, maybe you have 100 cases of rape in a society and they are hidden.
Mm-hmm.
But if you choose the shortest way and the easiest way, that everybody accuses another one for raping,
mm-hmm.
what happened? It is possible that out of 100, even one innocent man or one innocent woman also is accused
mm-hmm.
because you have just 1 witness
right.
or 2 witnesses. So Islam says
someone can be falsely accused.
Can be falsely accused, yes.
But the question still remains that I think out of those 100 cases, I would assume 99% or even 100, still 4 people would not be witness to such a crime.
Yes, they would not witness, yes. This is true.
Right. Okay.
But the problem is that which of them is more important? The 99 cases of rape remained hidden,
mm-hmm.
or the honor and the chastity of 1 innocent Muslim
mm-hmm.
as an innocent man or innocent woman
mm-hmm.
is somehow wiped out?
I guess there must be other evidence that's available, but we're talking about the 4 witnesses, which makes those other 99 impossible to prove,
mm-hmm.
I would think. And then the other one, if it's false accusation, then I'm sure that they can go on to find evidence that proves them innocent.
No, so the witnesses, I say that it is intentionally, in fact, the religious law has set 4 witnesses
mm-hmm. to make
in
it
order
impossible?
that even not a single innocent man or single innocent woman is accused this way,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it means that. So if this crime, if this offense is hidden, no problem, it is hidden.
Mm-hmm.
The society would not understand it, the society would not consider it as a fact every day.
Mm-hmm.
But if one Muslim man and if one Muslim woman is accused falsely,
mm-hmm.
this is very difficult for religion to accept,
mm-hmm.
okay?
It means that justify it, though.
It means that the religion of Islam would consider your honor, would consider your chastity something very valuable, even at the cost of those 99 cases which have remained hidden. Maybe those 99 also there have been true rapes, okay? Mm-hmm. But we say that if you have the easiest way, the easier way, means not just four witnesses, mm-hmm. you have, for example, just by one witness, you are proving, then it is possible and it is likely that one case which is falsely attributed and accused also would enter this community. And this is something that Islam doesn't welcome.
Okay, but I think still what we're doing is, if you take the four kind of witnesses out of the equation, then if there's a flawed system in the law and the judicial system, the court, then yeah, that one person could be accused. But also, if we're denying these 99 cases a right to go to the court and fight for their right and to prove that this has happened to them, then we're not promoting this huge sin, like you said, because a person who is doing this and is not getting caught, because no one can find four witnesses, they're going to continue to do this. Mm-hmm. So as a result, they're basically putting society at risk because this person, this perpetrator is going on and on, and this rapist is doing the same thing because they're not being punished. Uh-huh. So again, I don't know.
Yes, there are, I want to say that, so suppose that the case is another case. Mm-hmm. For example, there is, you know, traffic offense. Mm-hmm. Okay, driving offense. Is it only the punishment which makes people far from commission of these offenses? Or no? There are some more important techniques and things.
Well, there are more important preventive methods.
I want to say that, yes, punishment is just one of the ways. Mm-hmm. We should not highlight it. We should not
It takes the person off the street.
Uh-huh.
Right, so it makes them less, mm-hmm. makes it less dangerous for others.
Yes, I say that, you know, punishment is one solution, mm-hmm. but there are more important solutions. We say that if you want a good society, the good society is not, cannot be a good society just by punishment. Mm-hmm. The culture should be different. Mm-hmm. Islam would prescribe here a good culture. It says, okay, you should have a good culture in the family first if you want your boys and girls not to commit this sin. Mm-hmm. The parents should have an etiquette and should have some special principles and regulations for them.
So like everything else, it's preventative, which uh-huh. is obviously preferred, but I think at this point it's past preventative.
Mm-hmm.
So it's too late for that.
No, right. I mean that if those things happen,
it wouldn't.
Yes, then you would not see, you would not witness this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, punishment is prescribed when you actually have the offense.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can do something that prevents originally and rightly from the beginning, that it can prevent and makes you far from the sin, it is better than punishment.
Of course.
Because now, possible. Yes, that is why we say that there are other solutions. Means one is education in the family, mm-hmm. another is education in the school, education in the mosque. Then you have the, for example, mass media in mm-hmm. the Islamic country. Then you have the government. So if you have the government and the government facilitates the things for marriage, mm-hmm. for people to marry, the number of people who would go to this thing would be much less. Another thing is that, you know, when you have this kind of thing, Islam is a system of regulations. Mm-hmm. We should not just concentrate on one point, which is punishment for rape. Mm-hmm. Islam says, okay, girls and boys have some duties at home, at school, in the street.
Mm-hmm.
So if the girl has observed all the Islamic regulations in the society, so she has her suitable hijab,
mm-hmm.
she has her chastity. When she wants to travel, she says, okay, as far as possible, I should be with one of the mahram members of the family.
Mm-hmm.
According to Islam, the girl, the wife should not go alone, in fact, and to lonely places alone. So if you observe all these things, then there is no room for that sin.
I hate to cut you off, but
that is the last choice.
Unfortunately, it does still happen because the rapist is obviously someone who's sick.
Yes.
And but we do have to cut this short. So overall, it's better. Obviously, preventative is better. But ultimately, it still unfortunately does happen. Mm-hmm. We'll go for a break. When we come back, it's time for From Here and There. Welcome back. Now it's time for From Here and There with my colleague Farhad Bafoju. In this part of the program, we'll have an interesting book for you, an email from your dear viewers, and an obviously informative article. So let's see what Here and There has to offer today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Abdul.
You're very welcome.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this part of the show, From Here and There.
A new research indicates that higher levels of vitamin D in mothers during pregnancy help babies have stronger muscles in their later life. The study conducted by scientists at the University of Southampton showed the impact of the vitamins on baby during mother's pregnancy. The study on nearly 700 children unveiled that women with high levels of vitamin D in the late stages of pregnancy were more likely to have children with greater muscle strength. When the children were 4 years old, their grip strength and muscle mass were measured. An earlier study carried out by the Australian researchers had disclosed that women with low blood levels of vitamin D during pregnancy are more likely to have babies with language problems. Many experts recommend taking a 10 microgram vitamin D supplement daily for mothers during pregnancy. Vitamin D may be obtained with a well-balanced diet, including various types of fish, soy milk, broccoli, egg, liver, cheese, butter, and fortified milk and cereals. Getting 10 to 15 minutes of sunshine 3 times a week is also recommended. Welcome back. Today I'm going to introduce you to the book Self-Building, An Islamic Guide for a Spiritual Migration Towards God, written by Ayatollah Ibrahim Amini. The book presents a detailed description of special deeds as performed by God's most devoted sincere servants during their lives, the self-restraint and asceticism practiced by them during these worships, and the spiritual purification achieved by them. Ayatollah Ibrahim Amini was born in 1925 in the city of Najafabad in the province of Isfahan. Having finished his primary studies in Najafabad, he joined the Religious Learning Center of Isfahan in 1942. Then he joined the most famous Religious Learning Center of Qom in 1947, where he learned jurisprudence and principles under the tutorship of most eminent religious scholars of that period. Well, Anna, it's time for your emails. We have today an email written by Mahmoud Al-Hassan. He has told us, hello, friends in prayer home. I have a question which has been in my mind for such a long time. I want to know what taqiyya is. What is its difference? What is the difference, in fact, between taqiyya and lying? Thank you so very much. Dr. Karimi.
All right. Yes. You know, taqiyya happens when, in fact, you are afraid of your life. You know, the life of human being and the life of Muslim is more precious than everything. So if you are in a community, and so there is no fear of guiding people, but you are afraid that if you tell the truth, then you would be killed, okay? Or another serious danger would come to you. Then here, because the value of life of human being is higher than the value of everything, God has allowed and the Prophet has allowed to conceal and to hide your internal beliefs. But otherwise, even sometimes, but on the other hand, if sometimes you know that, okay, you would be killed, but your killing here and your sacrifice here would lead to the guidance of one man or to the guidance of a community. Here, God himself says, here you should sacrifice your life. There is no room for taqiyya here, you know? So it depends. Imam Hussein did not do taqiyya because he said that, okay, here I should do my duty because I know Islam is in danger, and if I lose my life, this would lead to the life and to the spiritual life of many, many people. So that is, there was not any room for taqiyya.
Now, aside from saving one's life, are there any circumstances which Islam allows the practice of taqiyya?
In fact, your life may be in danger, you know, your reputation, your family. So those things which have a great value, you know, or the fame of the Islamic government. Maybe if you do something in that society, then you have somehow defamed the Islamic government. You have done away with the good name of the Islamic government, with Allah, with the sanctities. So one sanctity would be under question, under doubt. So these are also the circumstances that would allow that.
But some of these concepts you mentioned are relative. How can our viewer understand that concept, for example, is so important that he has to practice taqiyya instead of...
I think reputation, is probably something you could really have a lot of flexibility. A lot of people would say, well, this is, you know, protecting my reputation. I want to look good, so I can do taqiyya here. I think that's why...
I think reputation here is not just the worldly and material reputation. By reputation, we mean religious reputation, you know, and mostly the Islamic reputation of someone is in danger, his honor, his chastity, something like that. So if that is in danger, then there would be also an opportunity for taqiyya.
Now, one question that's, of course, I'm curious to know, because I was listening to your interview just a couple of minutes ago, and about the woman who were asking about raping. Do you think she should practice taqiyya and keep quiet in order to save the community of Islam or not?
It is not, this is not named taqiyya. Mm-hmm. Because, so nobody is asking him to say, and she prevents to say. Means it is her own way. So she can say something and she can be silent, okay? So this is something that happens in other parts of our life, in other tasks also. Sometimes you say, okay, this is a private part of my life. I would not talk about it with anybody. So yes, this can be done in our life when we think that if we speak about it, if we let it out, it would somehow corrupt our life. It would somehow influence maybe badly our
damage
family,
the society.
The society. It would be a desirable thing.
Thank you very much, Dr. Karimi.
Welcome.
Well, that's it for this edition of From Here and There. Thanks for watching. Back to Ms. Afju.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bafaju. Unfortunately, we don't have that much time, so we won't be watching a report today, but we'll take a look at a clip, and we'll be back with more of your questions.
The flower and God I crave. Open your mouth. The sweetness I crave. Disclose yourself from behind the clouds. A sunny, shiny face I crave. I'm sick of these flimsy friends, bold and brave companions I crave. In one hand, a cup of wine, caressing your herb with the other one, stamping, dancing in the middle, I crave. Searching the town for a total man, desperate to find who cannot be found. I crave. Listen to the grief of the reed, of the vice of isolation it tears. Whoever fell apart from the source will seek to get back to the course. To every crowd that groaned and befriended more, it assumed congestion in his mind. Cast to my secrets, they were blind. My secrets are my griefs, yet the eyes and the ears have no beliefs. Body and soul are unveiled in trust, yet comprehension of the soul is not a must. What's the loss if you soul go not slip a single night? Knock not the door of separation tonight. What's the loss if the world is overwhelmed with the blossoms you struggle to plant? What's the loss if the elixir of life merges from darkness to fill the desert and the town? What's the loss if your generosity and love revives only a few? What's the loss if you pour your wine-filled cup over heads of already drunks over and over again? Wake up. Wake up. As the night goes by, wake up. Dissociate. Dissociate. From your own self-being, dissociate. A priceless soul is on sale by an idiot. If you believe not, rush the market right away. A voice declining the earth said, a healer descending to you. You're if demanding remedy, get ill. Get ill.
Welcome back to the program. Well, unfortunately, we only have about 2 minutes left in the program. So, Dr. Karimi, I'm sure you'd have to kind of summarize this answer, but in a brief response, we have a teenager here who lives in Australia and has been told that music is haram. And he says that I try to refrain from listening to it, but I have extreme severe depression and music makes me feel better. What should I do?
You know, firstly, as a principle, I should say that not every piece of music is haram or forbidden. Mm-hmm. So we have also types of music which are permissible and are allowed. So if there is a music and the content of the music is something that reminds you of God, mm-hmm. it reminds you of the blessings of God, it reminds you of the hereafter, knowing yourself, mm-hmm. even the beauties of nature, mm-hmm. you know, this is not something wrong. Mm-hmm. So, but if the music is something that, as we say, it is suitable for the parties which are full of sins and, you know, corruptions and illegitimate entertainments, yes. Mm-hmm. So this is something that is not allowed in Islam because mm-hmm. Islam says that every minute and moment of your life should be useful. Mm-hmm. So, and I think one principal reason for listening to music is that, so especially in the West, is that, okay, you have some free time and you want to fill it, mm-hmm. you know? But Islam says that you should fill your free time with something more useful. Mm-hmm. So if the music is also, as I said, something which makes you remember God, makes you remember the beauties of the world, makes you remember something which is legitimate in Islam, mm-hmm. Then there is no problem.
Okay, so I think lyrics might be key and something, I guess, use your own discretion to an amount. Unfortunately, we are out of time. We'd like to cover more of your questions, so keep on sending them in. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget, go on our website, sahartv.ir, and drop us a line and tell us what you think. purehome@sahartv.ir is our email. Thank you very much to Dr. Karimi for being with us, and to you, dear viewers, for inviting us into your Pure Home. Until next time, goodbye and God bless.